What you missed on Weekend Mornings with Jason Dacey. Only on Money FM 89.3.
Let's review the week in international news with Steve Oaken, the former Clinton administration official, who's a regular contributor here on Money FM 89.3. Steve, let's start with Brexit. What a mess this is. Of course, the date is looming. It's next month. It's so close. It's actually, March the 29th, where they're supposed to exit, and Britain would permanently regret leaving the European Union without a deal, according to Business Minister Greg Clark. And Parliament needs to reach a decision to stop this in the next 2 weeks. How can they resolve this? Because they seem to be getting further and further apart.
Well, you know, as pathetic as politics are in the United States, you just have to look across the Atlantic and see it could be a lot worse. They really know the right decision is to maintain some relationship with the EU, if not outright to stay within the EU. But no one has the political strength to make that happen. And this is just going to keep going on and on and on. And, you know, one might expect that they're not going to be able to make the decision they need to make by March 29th. And it's going to drag out even longer beyond that.
I mean, there are a lot of sticking issues, aren't there? You know, the Ireland thing as well, you know, with Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. Exactly. You know, they're saying that what was sold to the UK people when they voted on Brexit is actually different to what's going to be implemented.
Well, that's the problem. They sold an idea. They didn't have any policy in place. They didn't say what the process would be. They did not go and look at what would be the real critical issues you need to address, like that border, between Ireland and Northern Ireland. And so the decision that the made compromise decision with the EU that was made basically ignores that and says, well, we'll worry about that later, and maybe one day technology will figure out how to have this effective border without a wall, which we can talk about the difficulties of building walls.
Yeah,
and that's not going to happen, and they're not going to have any real decision on what to do between Ireland and Northern Ireland, and that's why they're having such trouble getting this, the May compromise with the EU through. But nobody's going to stand up and make the tough decision.
Well, let's move from the UK and Europe to the US. A lot of names into the hat for the Democratic nominee for president for 2020, including Cory Booker, former mayor of Newark. Elizabeth Warren is there as well. Tell me about Cory Booker, because he's kind of intriguing. He's 49 years of age. He's an African-American, known for being the mayor of Newark, which a lot of Singaporeans are familiar with because of Newark Airport. That's the airport you fly into the New York area. And there are comparisons, of course, with President Obama, former President Obama. But he's quite a different character. How serious a contender might he be?
Well, what the Democrats are trying to figure out as a party is two questions. One, do we want to be ideologically pure? Or two, do we want to nominate the candidate who can best beat Donald Trump? And they may be two different things. And then if you're going to get into that debate, you have different wings of the party. And so you have, the more liberal wing, and certainly Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are in that camp. You have the more establishment wing, and you might put a Joe Biden, right, or Governor Terry McCall, former governor of Virginia, in that camp. And then you have people trying to figure out where do they fit within the middle. Kamala Harris is a very strong candidate there, and Cory Booker is a very strong candidate there. So he has his niche is going to try and be the liberal who is pro-business. And that is to some degree where Bill Clinton was in 92.
Yeah, but he's obviously very different to Bill Clinton, being from the Northeast. We've seen him, I'm growing up and hanging out in a blue-collar neighborhood. He's kind of painted himself as that. But, some people on the Republican side have been very critical of him and saying, I think Donald Trump said he made a mess of Newark. What would you say about that?
Well, I mean, Newark is Newark got destroyed, basically in the 60s during the riots and the race riots and in the aftermath of the assassination of Martin Luther King. And, here's a man who went to Harvard and then says, I'm going to come back, go to Newark, live in Newark, not take the money, not work for a big law firm or not try and go to Washington. And I think he's going to get a lot of credit for that. So in an interesting way, whoever Donald Trump attacks the most is probably who Donald Trump thinks is going to potentially be the strongest candidate against him. So Cory Booker is is in that camp of who has a legitimate shot. But for the Democrats, there are probably about 10 people who have a legitimate shot right now.
Would he be a good choice for you? Do you think he'd be worth, you know, he's young, he's under 50, which is pretty unusual.
Actually, that's not unusual for the Democrats. The Democrats, for the most part, nominate somebody who is below 50.
I guess I'm comparing it to like Joe Biden and all those guys who have been mentioned, and even Bernie Sanders, and even Hillary Clinton's been mentioned as a possible contender.
Well, I mean, I do think the Democrats will nominate somebody, I predict, under the age of 60 for sure. I think that is where the Democrats go. They look for somebody younger, somebody newer, somebody more vibrant. You know, Bill Clinton and Barack Obama are two perfect examples of that. So I think you're going to see a candidate more along the lines of Clinton and Obama.
They were, weren't they?
Mid-40s, early 50s, and not somebody like Hillary Clinton. I think she was, you know, a little bit of an outlier for where the Democrats would go.
Okay. Elizabeth Warren, Massachusetts senator. She made another attempt to move on from the Native American ancestry issues, saying that she's not part of the Cherokee Nation. And this is someone that President Trump calls Pocahontas in a very insulting way, which, you know, Native American groups aren't happy with. This has been a nightmare for her, you know, because she tried to claim that ancestry and the you know, she mentioned her family having the Native American roots and she had the DNA test. I mean, politically, she's made a real mess of this.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's the challenge. I mean, you can be very strong on the substance, which she clearly is, whether you agree or disagree with her policies.
Yep.
She is very strong substantively. She is not a great politician. And
what's the difference?
Well, I mean, a politician can read, you know, where is the country going? What tone should I take? What messages should I give? How do I connect with people? Donald Trump, like him or not, Donald Trump was able to do that. He was able to connect to his base on that level, as was Barack Obama, as was you know, Bill Clinton, as was Ronald Reagan, great politicians, George W. as well. She is not in that category. And in this day and age of social media, in all of the different, you know, you have to be on 24/7. She's not great at that. And whether she can weather that and win on her policies and win on the substance is probably a reach. And things like this, trying to play Donald Trump's game is not a win for almost anybody.
Yeah. And there was a video of her drinking a beer on social media, which she was trying to become more popular and I guess more normal. This is our International News Week in Review with Steve Okun. And we're looking now at the Virginia governor, Ralph Northam. He's denied he was in a racist photo that appeared in his 1984 student yearbook page after initially apologizing for it. Now, just to give some clarity on this, it was a picture of a man in a black face and another in white robes from the white supremacist group, the Ku Klux Klan. Initially, he said, yeah, look, that's probably me. He didn't say which person it was. But what's going on here? I mean, you're in college around that time. You know, what can we read into this?
Well, he's the current governor of Virginia. Whenever you have me back on next, we'll probably refer to him as the former governor of Virginia. There is almost no way he can survive this. I mean, this is a you can't, you know, say something that is as racist as what he did, you know, and which is having somebody in blackface, having somebody dressed up as the Klan. And when you're 25 years old in medical school, say that this is not who I am today. You can't, that is not good enough anymore. That doesn't work. You know, back then in that is part of what some of the society in the South was like, even into the 80s. It's just not acceptable. And you can see that he had his press conference in which he apologized, says, I'm not that person. Look at what I've done the last 25 years, which is
But then he backtracked on that.
It was a very impressive record.
What's going on?
He was a terrible politician. You can win as a bad politician over governor of certain races. Certainly depending on who you're running against. He cannot withstand this. And you've had people flip. The two former governors of Virginia, two Democratic senators, have now said he has to resign after he did his apology tour. So this is going to end. You can't do this. And certainly you can't do this in the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party thinks it has the high ground when it comes to race, when it comes to gender. And they hold themselves to a very high standard. And they will call for their own party members to resign when they cross that line, be it in terms of Me Too, be it in terms of race. And so he is not going to be able to withstand being part of the Democratic Party anymore.
All right, let's talk about the economy because the Dow Jones had a pretty good January. Well, actually, yes, it had a good January after a bad December, and the market's up. And the Fed's come out and said there's not likely to be any more interest rate rises for a while. What's behind that?
Well, the Fed used the word patience. We've got to take we need to be patient. We have to have patience to see what's going to happen in the economy. There are so many black swans that are out there right now that until you know what can possibly happen, it'll be hard for the Fed to make that decision. Will the U.S. and China come to some trade agreement by March 1st, or are tariffs going to go on, let alone possibly go up? What's going to happen with the government? Is it going to shut down again? And what will that do to the economy? The debt ceiling is going to get hit. Is that – are we going to get an agreement to extend the debt ceiling, or are we going to go into default, is the United States? Is the U.S. going to pull out of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada free trade agreement, or is that not going to get approved and the U.S. pulls out of NAFTA? What's going to happen with Brexit? There's so much out there that could go really wrong for the economy. I think the Fed's saying, let's be patient, let's see what happens, and then we'll make our decisions.
This is our International News Week in Review with Steve Oaken. So when we look at the China-U.S. talks and, you know, the things behind the scenes, how confident are you that things are heading in the right direction? It's a very important moment for the world and for the economy, isn't it?
Right. Well, what the U.S. wants is structural change in China. The U.S. wants China to move from a state-driven economy to a market-driven economy. That cannot happen by March 1st. That's impossible to happen by March 1st. So the question is, will China do enough, not only buying beans and Boeings and LNG and the like to reduce a trade deficit, but will they do enough to stop forced technology transfers? Will they do enough to open up foreign direct investment into their country? Will they do enough to have a level playing field for foreign businesses and SOEs? They can't do that by March 1st, but will they make enough commitments, and can an enforcement mechanism be put in place by the United States to ensure that China does live up to its promises after the an agreement were to be signed? Only one person is going to make that decision, and that's Donald Trump. And Donald Trump has said he's going to want to meet President Xi sometime this month, probably in Vietnam or Thailand, assuming that the Trump-Kim summit happens, which is another black swan, right, that's out there. And so it's very hard to predict. But if the U.S. sticks to what it wants, it's very hard to see how China's going to be able to accommodate that within a month.
Yeah, that's something that the markets will be watching very closely. Also coming up is Super Bowl 53. Of course, that's the American football game between the two-time defending American Football Conference champion New England Patriots and the NFC champion Los Angeles Rams to determine the champion of the NFL. I mean, we love sports, you and I, Steve, but I think it's the stories around the Super Bowl that's creating headlines, with Adam Levine from Maroon 5 not appearing in a pre-Super Bowl press conference, and then there's been talk about why he did it and whether the NFL told him not to do it. What's your interpretation?
Well, the debate around the Super Bowl halftime performance is really an indicative of a larger debate around society. Artists, businesses are now much more expected to take into account social concerns, where society is going, into what they are going to do. That used to not be the case. Look back, you know, when Michael Jordan was asked to take a role in the Senate race. You know, Michael Jordan, obviously being African American, an African American candidate was running. People were saying you should come behind him. He said, "No, I'm going to not do that."
Yeah.
Republicans buy shoes too.
Yes,
right? I stay neutral.
Yeah.
I don't know that you can do that anymore. Mm. And now with the NFL having, you know, blacklisted Colin Kaepernick because he took a knee during the national anthem, which upset, you know, a certain segment of the population, President Trump included.
Yeah. Yeah.
The NFL has refused. No team has signed him in the last 3 years.
And he's taking the knee to protest against, police brutality against blacks and inequality.
And racial inequality. Mm. And so he's taking a social position by not standing during the national anthem. That has angered some people. The NFL has at least implicitly, if not tacitly, said we're not going to employ you anymore. And now you have people like Rihanna, right, and Jay-Z saying we're not going to play the Super Bowl halftime show because that's supporting an organization that is punishing an African American for taking a social position. Adam Levine, you probably shouldn't do it either. This debate didn't come up ever before. I mean, look at, you know, Bruce Springsteen 10 years ago. He played the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you're wearing a shirt today, aren't you, that, marking Bruce Springsteen's appearance in a Super Bowl halftime show.
Yeah, no, so I have my shirt for the boss on. Now, would Springsteen play the Super Bowl today? And with him being such an
outspoken critic of President Donald Trump.
Yeah, taking such a strong stand on social issues beyond that.
Yeah.
And would he play? I don't know if Bruce would have played the Super Bowl today. But you look at what society's moving. Businesses need to understand this. Entertainers need to understand this. And this is going to be part of your calculus now.
All right. Steve Oaken, we've run out of time. We'll have more from you a bit later on. This has been the International News Week in Review here on Money FM 89.3.